Welcome to Modern Family Matters, a podcast devoted to exploring family law topics that matter most to you, covering a wide range of legal, personal, and family law matters with expert analysis from skilled attorneys and professional guests. We hope that our podcast provides answers, clarity, and guidance towards a better tomorrow for you and your family. Here's your host, Steve Altishan.
Hi, everyone. I'm Steve Altishan, Director of Client Partnerships at Pacific Cascade Legal. And today we have private investigator Jennifer Brissenden to discuss important safety tips to be aware of when you're planning on leaving an abusive relationship. So, Jennifer, before we start in on this topic, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be what you are now?
Yes, Steve. My name is Jennifer Brissenden. I left my career in law enforcement and forensic mental health last year. I spent 12 years doing that. The last 9 of those 12 years, I worked specifically within domestic violence and sex trafficking. And I took a little time off last year and decided I wanted to be my own boss and open my own private investigation company. I do a variety of work, but my specialty and my focus is definitely related to intimate partner violence.
Well, then this is perfect. This is a perfect topic for us. So before we get into some of the tips, can we just kind of start talking a little bit about what we mean by domestic violence and recognizing abuse?
Sure, absolutely. I think abuse looks a little bit different in every relationship, and it comes on a little bit different in every relationship. I think we could spend an entire day talking about some of the early warning signs or signs that you can look for with friends, family, loved ones. But I think today when we're talking about domestic violence, I want to kind of encompass all aspects of it. Talk about physical violence, emotional abuse, sexual coercion or abuse, financial abuse, and a big, big one today that we're seeing more and more of is online and digital stalking and harassment. So that I think is becoming a bigger and bigger component. So the umbrella, when I use the phrase domestic violence or intimate partner violence, is very broad.
So when to go is always a difficult thing. And you know, we see that in our clients. It's like, you know, when to say this is enough, I need to get out. How can people know or what should they, you know, at some point end up saying, okay, I got to get out of this.
Mm-hmm. I think that because every case is so individualized, that is a really difficult question to answer. I think that being planful, being mindful, having very clear plans and taking very clear steps when you're starting to think about getting out of it. I do want to, if we can though, back up for a minute, just because I really can't have this conversation about domestic violence without at least having a brief discussion about the stigma that our society attaches to it. I think that there is so much shame that survivors experience, particularly people who come from well-to-do families, you know, have a high level of education, are in an important role in society. And we hear so often, and I'm not judging this because I've been guilty of it. I spent the first 3 years of my career guilty of using the phrase, why doesn't she leave? Why doesn't she just pick up and leave? And there are so many intricacies and so many reasons why people don't leave and can't leave, more importantly. I don't think that this is a life anyone chooses to stay in. So I just kind of want to put that out there first, that this impacts everyone, every socioeconomic status, every gender, you name it. It's widespread. Domestic violence doesn't discriminate.
No, and that kind of actually, to me, also kind of folds into the getting out part. It's hard to get out because you're embarrassed or you think I can handle this or all of those sorts of things. But before actually walking out the door, if that's the literal way you go, are there ways you can start to get ready to leave?
I think there are a lot of ways. Oh boy, let's go through them one by one.
I like that.
documenting everything that you can. And I know that sometimes that's difficult. It's overwhelming. When I say document everything, I am talking about if you've been physically abused, documenting your injuries, taking photographs, having those date and time stamped. Our judicial system is very much, if there's no proof, it didn't happen. A court system is not going to go with he said, she said. If you can audio record times that you're being yelled at, if you can get photos of damaged property or a hole in the wall, screenshots, you know, threatening text messages, voicemails that have maybe been left. And once you have that evidence, I encourage everybody to send it to somebody safe, identify somebody that you can put in charge of that evidence, send it to them, and then immediately delete it. If an abuser knows that you're documenting this, you're putting yourself at further risk. So I would say just ask that person, hey, I'm going to send you stuff. When I send you things, please put it on a thumb drive and just save it. You don't need to respond to me. Just so you know that information is kept safe somewhere. I think that's one of the things that you can do. Safety planning around the financial aspect. Domestic violence for abusers, it's all about power and control. And that's not just physical, sexual control. That oftentimes spills over into finances. I've spoke to many women who they have no control of the money. They're not allowed to go grocery shopping by themselves. So it can be really difficult, but we know it takes money to leave. If you're going to go out and try and provide for yourself and or your children, you need money to do it. So saving everything you can. If you do get to go to the grocery store by yourself, take out $5 or $20 cash if you can. Keep that somewhere safe. Just save every penny, because there are going to be things that you need that money for when you do ultimately decide to leave, or as you're taking steps to leave. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes absolute sense. You talked about a safe person that you can deposit stuff with, which gets me a little bit to just the whole idea before you actually walk out, you're communicating with someone. And can that be unsafe?
It can be extremely unsafe. When you're dealing with someone who wants power and control over you and is monitoring your activities, it's highly likely that they're monitoring your text messages, your phone records, your emails that are going in and out, your social media. So that communication can be dangerous if you're using your own devices to communicate. Thank you for leading me into one of the other things that you can do. Purchase a burner phone if you can. 7-Eleven, Walmart, wherever you want to go, buy just the cheapest phone that you can. I think a lot of people make the mistake, because they want to be able to retrieve information, registering that phone, putting it in their name, connecting it to a recovery phone or recovery email. Don't do that. If your accounts are being monitored, you don't want that showing up. So be willing to recognize if that phone goes missing, that phone goes missing. Not the end of the world. It's not worth jeopardizing your safety for. Keep your phone off Wi-Fi. If you have a burner that you're hiding at the house, keep it off Wi-Fi. That device will show up on your Wi-Fi, and I know I keep saying he and she. I know that this is across all groups, all varieties of heterosexual relationships, etc. So that's just for simplicity. That burner phone, I know we had that like federal emergency broadcast thing come about recently. Do you remember that? That goes out to burners also. So that brought up an interesting point that if you're not using that phone, keep it shut off. The last thing you want is to have that thing hid under your bed mattress and suddenly at 3 a.m. you have an alarm going off. So I think, you have to be very careful digitally. I know when you and I spoke, you brought up a really important point of using public computers if you can, public Wi-Fis, going to your local library to be able to communicate with attorneys or advocates or whoever it is that you're involved with, I think is a really good idea. And I know it's not always possible, right? There are situations where someone has so much control over you that you can't go anywhere without their knowledge. But if you can, I think that's a really good option for folks.
Should you, you always hear this, I call it a trope, when you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And it's, but in this case, I mean, is it important, and it sounds weird, to practice leaving?
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think our best plans are when we have it planned out in our head. We have all those little details, all those little important details that you might not need, but you might, and it's better to have them versus not. I think one of the things too I want to talk about is being ready to go, not waiting for that explosive incident where you're like, oh man, I got to go, but I have to pack up all my stuff. What do I need? Have a bag. If your safe person can keep it, have a to-go bag, for lack of better words, that has a couple days worth of clothing, copies of IDs, birth certificates, titles, financial paperwork, anything that you think you might need. Ideally, if you can take originals and save copies from the place that you're leaving, I think that's ideal. But you basically, you want to prepare to leave and imagine that you can never go back to retrieve the things you need, that you want to go back to retrieve.
That's such a great point. Time after time after time. You know, clients will say, okay, I got out of the house, but now they won't let me back. They changed the locks. I need this. I need that. And while the legal process can do that, it's not a quick process and it's not a cheap process. And in respect of this, it's not necessarily a safe process to go back.
Correct. Correct. And even if you do go back, your stuff may now be gone.
Yeah.
Or it may be destroyed.
Yeah.
Abusers don't like people leaving because it takes away the control and power. So yes, take everything with you.
If we're past sort of the before you leave, but if we're not, let me know. But if we are, okay, you go out the door. Who do you want to inform and who don't you want to inform? I mean, it's sort of like, okay, I'm in here now. Who do I reach out to? And we haven't really talked about kids, but I mean, kids could even be involved in this. But I mean, just who do I reach out to at this point and let know at least what happened?
Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic question. I think you should have code words or code phrases set up ahead of time with whoever that safe person is in your life that you have identified. Have the most nonsensical code figured out ahead of time that says, hey, if I, you know, send you a text that says I'm running out to buy a jar of pickles, you know that I left, and, you know, they know that you're going to get in contact with them when you're in a safe place, or they know the plan ahead of time of where you're planning to go if you already know that. I would not start calling everyone. It is not, sadly, it's not horribly uncommon for someone to leave, be in hiding, and tell someone who ultimately tells the abuser.
Yeah.
These guys can be very charming, very coercive, put on a great face to the world. And you don't know what story they're telling. Like, hey, I'm really worried about her mental health. She struggled with depression. I'm afraid she's suicidal. I need to check on her. And suddenly you're not safe again.
Yep.
So share this much information with the people or persons that you need to share it with.
When you leave, you've got the burner phone probably still if you need it. But what about your phone or your laptop? Can they find you if you're moving around? And especially if you're doing anything on social media?
Yes. You can find a lot of information through social media. If you're savvy enough, if someone posts a picture on social media, depending on how location services are set up on your device, that information could be tracked back to location. There's so much technology-wise now, keyloggers, spyware on computers and phones, GPS trackers. If I were in the position where I were leaving and was in a life-threatening situation, I'm leaving everything of my regular devices behind. Vehicles can be included in that. GPS trackers are everywhere now and cheap and easy. And all they've got to do is stick it on your car and suddenly they know everywhere you're going.
Yeah.
Which comes back to the financial piece. If you've saved some money, you can catch an Uber, right? Although that could be tracked, depending on how into your device they are, that could potentially be tracked as well.
And these days, you know, people are buying like those little iPhone trackers that you put in luggage, or you put on your keys, or you put somewhere. I mean, those are still going. They're still, you know, processing where you are.
Yeah. I think the theory that we're seeing here is leaving is dangerous. And for anybody watching this who, you know, doesn't have any education or experience with DV, it is dangerous. It is the most dangerous time. You're taking an already violent situation, you're taking away the abuser's power and control, and you're making that dangerous situation even more dangerous. It's frightening. It's frightening to leave.
Are there things you can do to at least try to lessen the danger? Are there people, resources, that kind of stuff can help at least to some extent protect?
There are a lot of, be careful how I say this. No, I don't. I'm just going to say it. I think that there are not near enough resources for domestic violence survivors, particularly for single women who don't have children and for women who have older children. Shelters are hard to get into. I think that there's a common misconception that, oh, you can just leave and go knock on the shelter door. That's not realistic. I think if you are in a situation where you've done all this planning, find an advocate. There are plenty of DV advocacy groups. If you've been working with police on criminal charges for anything, they have advocates available. But there are other resources, like here in Portland, VOA has advocates that are free to access. They can also sit down and go over a lot of this safety planning stuff with you and tailor it to what you need. They sometimes have funds available to be able to put you up in a motel for a night or a couple nights until you can figure out something different. We also have some laws that can protect people if they know how to advocate for themselves around those. So I'll give you a couple for instances. Oregon has employment-related laws around domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking victims, where they've got to work with you. There are laws that protect you. So if you need to flee, you need a reasonable amount of time off work to safety plan for yourself and your family, that can be done. People are scared, I think, to talk to employers oftentimes, but we spend a great portion of our lives at work. Those people see us as much as families are able to see us. And depending on what kind of company you work for, if you're being stalked, it would be really good for your employer to know what's going on, what are the risks, what does he look like, what does he drive, what else is out there. We have, in Oregon, we have what's called an address confidentiality program. Are you familiar with that at all? I mean, that's quite a bit. So the state of Oregon has a program where if you have been the victim of violence, sexual assault, stalking, you can apply for a confidential address. It's incredible. You send them a police report that says, hey, this happened. You get into this program and you filter all of your mail through this confidential address in Salem. And then they reroute it to you. They give you a little card to use. So even your driver's license address doesn't have to have your home address on it. It's a great way if you flee and relocate to keep your address hidden, because it all goes back to everything's available online. As soon as one person has your address, everybody has your address.
Yeah, that makes such sense. I mean, just the idea of you're on the, you know, Visa account, you're on the bank account, you're on the this and that account. And, yep. You know, some of the first things I'm thinking I'm going to do is I'm going to go there and I'm going to put it, you know, I'm going to change the address so they're not sending stuff there. Well, you can find where that address is.
Yep. It's a fabulous program that I think a lot of people don't don't know of, and it's completely free. So I know financial burdens, I think when people are leaving, are super important to think about. Financial resources are going to be limited for folks. So the fact that there are some free things out there are nice. One of the other things that people can be aware of are, and I'm not super familiar with them, but tenant landlord laws around victims of abuse. You are permitted to actually terminate your lease early if you need to. You are allowed to terminate the lease of your abuser and meanwhile keep yourself on the lease. You cannot be held responsible for damages that are caused. Let's say he puts his fist through a wall or breaks down a door. That's not your financial burden. So there definitely are some resources there that people can ask about.
We're almost running out of time, but just fast forward a month, 6 months. I guess what my kind of question is, when is it safe? And I know that's a crazy question because it's all individual. But I mean, when, you know, or maybe the how long should your vigilance keep applying after you've gone? I mean, it's not, I'm sure it's not like, okay, it's been a month, I can go back to just doing what I was.
Right. I'll give you the according to research articles answer. That would tell you that you are at the highest risk for about a year.
Whoa.
Which is a really long time.
Yeah.
It's a really long time. I can also give you my practical answer based on how long I've been doing this work and some of the severe cases that I've seen. The answer in some cases can be always. Yeah. You should always be vigilant. And I think especially that's true if you have been the victim of stalking. Stalking is kind of a whole different beast and a whole different mentality.
That is absolutely true. Speaking of that, just quick, I'm going to ask one more question. Here we got time. Okay. And it kind of goes to that stalking thing. Would you ever, you know, in a particularly kind of bad situation or in certain situations, say, leave the state? I mean, go as far away as you can from this person. Because, I mean, even the craziest people maybe can't afford or less likely to, you know, chase you through a couple of plane fares. Could it get to me where, hold on, I got cousins in New Jersey and I'm just going to go there for a while.
Forget New Jersey. We once bought a one-way plane ticket for a DV survivor to her home country, which happened to be Guam. Get on a plane and get out of here.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, that seems to make sense. I mean, I'm going to go around, because it seems to me that the person's going to go to the parents, the kids if they're, you know, older, the cousins and all of those, the best friends, work, school.
The schools. The schools is huge. Mm-hmm. The daycares, all the places that they know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And depending on the severity of it, that could place your extended family at risk.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and you talked a little bit on the employer is that they, you know, you don't want to put them at risk and they don't want to be at risk. So, you know, talking to them about it is not just helpful for maybe you, but for them.
Yeah. And safety planning, both, you know, for the person experiencing the abuse and what if this guy comes into our office? I'm working a DV case right now where we've done a lot of that, and this business has completely changed their protocols on, you know, people are no longer allowed to drop off packages without showing ID because he was stalking her and delivering things to work. So there's a lot that can be done once someone is ready to say, you know what, I need help. You don't have to be ashamed of this because I know it happens to everyone and I need help and I have to put together a safe group that can help me.
Right. Get off your Amazon account. Or at least change your delivery. Those are delivery addresses live in that system forever.
Forever. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Every system forever, which is why you got to start fresh, start new.
Wow. Wow.
We could talk for days.
We could talk for days, but we're totally out of time. I'm going to ask you, though, you gave so much information. You have so much more to give. And you're a private investigator, so you can help with some of this stuff. So how could people get a hold of you if they need to?
Well, I think the easiest is following whatever links you provide. And I say that only because I have an extremely long, complicated last name. So I'm not going to spell out my email address for you. I own and operate Brissenden Investigations, spelled with a B. I'm out in Clackamas County. I'm on Google, so you should be able to Google that mostly phonetically correct and have it pop up.
I like it. I like it. Well, mine never pops up, right? Thank you for that. And we are encouraging people, if you have any questions, any need to get a hold of Jennifer, definitely we can get you in contact with them. And we are now totally out of time. So Jennifer, thank you so much for being here today to talk about this. This was really an important subject. You really gave what I like to call nuts and bolts advice. Thank you.
We'll get to the smaller bits another time.
There you go. I love going into the weeds. So everyone else, thank you for joining us today. If anyone has further questions on today's topic, again, post it here. We can get you in touch with Jennifer. Until next time, stay safe, stay happy, and be well.
This has been Modern Family Matters, a legal podcast focusing on providing real answers and direction for individuals and families. Our podcast is sponsored by Landerholm Family Law and Pacific Cascade Family Law, serving families in Oregon and Washington. If you are in need of legal counsel or have additional questions about a family law matter important to you, please visit our websites at landerholmlaw.com or pacificcascadefamilylaw.com. You can also call our headquarters at 503-227-0200 to schedule a case evaluation with one of our seasoned attorneys. Modern Family Matters, advocating for your better tomorrow and offering legal solutions important to the modern family.